Welcome to the Rapid Learning Center's audio tutorial, Axial and Appendicular Musculature. By completing this tutorial, you will learn about the following: the muscles of the head and neck, the muscles of the trunk, the muscles of the upper extremity, and the muscles of the lower extremity. The Axial and Appendicular Musculature Concept Map. In this tutorial, we'll review the skeletal muscles that make up the axial musculature as well as the appendicular musculature. The axial musculature is made up of the muscles of the head and neck and the muscles of the vertebral column. The appendicular musculature includes the pectoral and pelvic girdle, the muscles of the upper and lower extremities. We'll also review the different muscle groups, examples of insertion and origins of muscles, as well as their function and innervation. Let's begin with the appendicular musculature. When learning about the muscles of the body, the different types of movements of a particular muscle can be tied to the actions of the joint it may cross. This helps with learning the different functions. For example, a flexion-extension joint, such as with the knee. Flexor muscles cross the anterior aspect of the joint, and extensor muscles cross the posterior aspect. A rotation joint, such as the shoulder. Muscles involved in medial rotation cross the medial aspect of the joint, and muscles involved in lateral rotation cross the lateral aspect. The muscles of the body are divided into the appendicular musculature and the axial musculature. In this tutorial, we'll cover the appendicular musculature first, then the axial musculature. We'll discuss the origin, insertion, and muscle action of key muscles. The following is a muscular system overview. In this tutorial, we'll review muscles from the different regions of the body. In the head and neck region, we'll discuss muscles of facial expression, muscles that move the pharynx, and muscles that position the eye. The pectoral girdle muscles, including the muscles that position the pectoral girdle and contribute to movement of the upper limb. The upper extremity muscles, including muscles that move the arm, the forearm, the hand, and fingers. We'll also discuss the muscles of the vertebral column, including the muscles of the back and the rectus and oblique muscles. We'll also cover the muscles of the pelvic girdle and the lower extremity. The muscles that move the pelvic girdle move the leg, move the foot, as well as the muscles that move the toes. Also the muscles of the perineum and the pelvic diaphragm. The following is a description of the major muscles of the body in an anterior view. The frontal belly of the occipital frontalis muscle above the eye. The orbicularis oculi muscle around the eye, and the orbicularis oris muscle around the mouth. On the bridge of the nose are the nasalis muscles, and on the anterior of the neck is the sternocleidomastoid muscle. Adjacent to that is the trapezius muscle. The shoulder region includes the deltoid muscle. The upper arm on the anterior surface has the biceps brachii and the brachialis muscle. On the forearm is the brachioradialis, the flexor carpi radialis, and the flexor carpi ulnaris. In the hip region is the gluteus medius muscle and the tensor fascia lata. The thigh includes the vastus lateralis, the rectus femoris, the sartorius, and the vastus medialis. The quadriceps muscles are attached to the patella via the quadriceps tendon. And in the lower leg are the gastrocnemius muscle, the tibialis anterior muscle, and the soleus muscle. The major muscles of the body described in a posterior view. At the back of the skull is the occipital belly of the occipital frontalis muscle, and covering the upper back and shoulder region is the trapezius muscle. Adjacent to that is the infraspinatus muscle. On the back of the arm is the long and lateral head of the triceps brachii muscle. The back of the forearm includes the brachioradialis muscle, the flexor carpi ulnaris muscle, and the extensor digitorum muscle. The majority of the back is covered by the superficial latissimus dorsi muscle. The gluteus maximus is the major muscle of the gluteus group, and on the back of the leg in the hamstring region is the semitendinosus muscle and the biceps femoris muscle. On the back above the calcaneal tendon is the gastrocnemius as well as the soleus muscle. The differences in function between the axial and appendicular musculature. The function of the axial musculature includes the following: positioning of the head and vertebral column, and assisting in respiration during the breathing cycle. Unlike the appendicular musculature, the axial muscles do not contribute to the movement of the limbs or their associated girdles. The functions of the appendicular musculature are to move and stabilize the upper and lower extremities and the associated pectoral and pelvic girdles. The musculature associated with the pectoral girdle. The muscles associated with the pectoral girdle and upper limb can be divided into the following groups. Number 1, the muscles that move the arm. Number 2, muscles that position the pectoral girdle. Number 3, muscles that move the forearm and hand. And number 4, muscles that move the hand and fingers. Let's begin with the muscles that position the pectoral girdle. In order for the arm to move in its full range of motion, the combination of muscles that position the girdle and the muscles that move the arm must be utilized. The muscles that position the pectoral girdle are number 1, the trapezius, number 2, the subclavius, number 3, the serratus anterior, number 4, rhomboid minor, number 5, rhomboid major, number 6, the pectoralis minor, and number 7, the levator scapulae. Let's discuss some of these muscles in more detail. The trapezius muscle is one of two muscles that cover the posterior portion of the neck and the back. These muscles extend from the base of the skull to the region of the 11th thoracic vertebrae. These triangular-shaped muscles have multiple innervations, and therefore specific regions of this muscle can contract independently. The rhomboid muscles are divided into the rhomboid minor and rhomboid major. These muscles underlie the trapezius. They're attached to the ventral border of the scapula and the dorsal surfaces of the cervical and thoracic vertebrae. The rhomboid muscles function to adduct or retract the scapula, which pulls it towards the back. These muscles also rotate the scapula downward. The levator scapulae muscle. They also underlie the trapezius muscle. The levator muscle is attached to the vertebral border of the scapula towards the superior angle and extends to the transverse process of 4 cervical vertebrae. This muscle functions to elevate the shoulders during movements of shrugging the shoulders. The subclavius muscles are a pair of muscles that underlie the pectoralis major muscle. These muscles also rotate the scapula downward. The subclavius muscle depresses and then protracts the end of the clavicle near the scapula. It also moves the shoulder. The pectoralis minor muscle is located on either side of the chest and it underlies the pectoralis major muscle. This muscle also moves the scapula and shoulder through its attachment to the coracoid process of the scapula bone. The serratus anterior muscle. The serratus anterior muscle is located on either side of the chest wall. This fan-shaped muscle is typically attached to the first 8 ribs and inserts onto the anterior margin of the scapula. When this muscle is contracted, it abducts the scapula and moves the shoulder anteriorly. The following is a clinical challenge question based on what you've learned so far in this tutorial. Here's the question. A 44-year-old male is seen by his physician after he's been hit in the back by a baseball during a baseball game. The pain the patient is complaining of is located in the upper back, slightly lateral to the midline of the back and approximately at the level of the fourth thoracic vertebrae. Based on this information, which of the following would be correct? A. The muscle involved in this injury is the latissimus dorsi muscle. B. The muscle involved in this injury is the trapezius. C. The long head of the triceps brachii is the cause of this patient's pain. D. Either the trapezius or the long head of the triceps could be the source of this patient's pain. Or E. The deltoid muscle could be the source of pain in this patient as it extends from the shoulder to the region of the first lumbar vertebrae. Here's the answer to the question. This question tests your knowledge of the anatomy of the musculature of the upper back region. Based on the information given in the question, it stated that the injury was in the upper back slightly lateral to the midline of the back and approximately at the level of the fourth thoracic vertebrae. The muscle in this region is the trapezius. Therefore, the correct answer for this question was B. The muscle involved in this injury is the trapezius. The following is a summary of some of the muscles that move the pectoral girdle. The trapezius muscle. The origin of the trapezius muscle is the occipital bone, ligamentum nuciae, and the spinous processes of the thoracic vertebrae. Its insertion is the clavicle and the acromion and scapular spine. The action of the trapezius is it can elevate, retract, depress, or rotate the scapula and the clavicle. Also, it can extend the neck. The trapezius is innervated by the accessory nerve. The subclavius muscle. Its origin is the first rib. It inserts on the clavicle inferior border. Its action is to depress and retract the shoulder, and it's innervated by the nerve to the subclavius. The serratus anterior muscle. The origin of the serratus anterior is the anterior and superior margins of ribs 1 to 9. The insertion is the anterior surface of the vertebral border of the scapula. Its action is to protract the shoulder, rotate the scapula, causing the glenoid cavity to move superiorly. The serratus is innervated by the long thoracic nerve. The rhomboid minor muscle. Its origin is the spinous processes of C7 to T1 vertebrae. It inserts on the vertebral border of the scapula. Its action is to adduct and perform downward rotation of the scapula. And it's innervated by the dorsal scapular nerve. The rhomboid major muscle. Its origin is the spinous processes of superior thoracic vertebrae. And the insertion is the vertebral border of the scapula from the spine to the inferior angle. The action of the rhomboid major is to adduct and perform downward rotation of the scapula. Innervation is from the dorsal scapular nerve. The pectoralis minor muscle. Its origin is the anterior surfaces and superior margins of ribs 3 to 5 and the fascia covering the associating external intercostal muscles. The insertion is the coracoid process of the scapula. The muscle action of the pectoralis minor is to depress and protract the shoulder. It rotates the scapula so the glenoid cavity moves inferiorly and elevates the ribs if the scapula is stationary. Its innervation is the medial pectoral nerve. The levator scapulae muscle. The origin of this muscle is the transverse processes of C1 to C4. The insertion is the vertebral border of the scapula near the superior angle of that bone. The action is to elevate the scapula, and the levator scapulae is innervated by the cervical nerves C3 to C4 and the dorsal scapular nerve C5. Now let's discuss the muscles that move the arm. The deltoid muscle is the major abductor muscle of the arm, and this muscle is also involved in the flexion and medial rotation of the humerus and extension and lateral rotation of the humerus. This superficial muscle is adjacent to the pectoralis major, the supraspinatus muscle. It is also a superficial muscle that assists the deltoid muscle at the beginning of the abduction movement of the arm. This muscle extends from the fossa of the scapula to the deltoid tuberosity of the humerus. The infraspinatus muscle. This underlies a portion of the deltoid, and the infraspinatus extends from the infraspinatus fossa of the scapula to the greater tubercle of the humerus. The infraspinatus muscle works along with the teres minor muscle to perform lateral rotation of the arm. The coracobrachialis muscle. This is a small, deep muscle that produces both flexion and adduction at the shoulder joint. This muscle extends from the coracoid process of the scapula to the medial margin of the humeral shaft. The subscapularis muscle. This is a deep muscle located behind the ribs, and it works along with the teres major muscle to rotate the arm medially. The teres major muscle has a similar function to that of the subscapularis muscle, which is to rotate the arm medially. The teres major muscle is a deep muscle that extends from the inferior angle of the scapula to the medial lip of the intertrabecular sulcus of the humerus. The muscles of the upper arm. On the anterior surface is the biceps brachii. On the posterior surface is the triceps brachii. The biceps brachii muscle has two origins, both of which are on the scapula, and the muscle inserts into the radius bone. The superficial muscle overlies the coracobrachialis muscle and the brachialis muscle. The biceps brachii works across three joints and performs flexion at the elbow and shoulder and supination. The biceps brachii muscle has two heads, a short head, which origin is on the coracoid process of the scapula, and the long head, whose origin is the supraglenoid tubercle of the scapula. The insertion of the biceps brachii muscle is the radial tuberosity. And the muscle action of the biceps brachii, as we mentioned, is flexion at the elbow and shoulder and supination. The biceps brachii is innervated by the musculocutaneous nerve C5 to C6. The latissimus dorsi muscle also moves the arm. Its origin is the spinous processes of inferior thoracic and all the lumbar vertebrae, ribs 8 to 12, and the thoracolumbar fascia. The latissimus dorsi inserts on the floor of the intertrabecular sulcus of the humerus, and its action is extension, adduction, and medial rotation at the shoulder. Its innervation is the thoracodorsal nerve C6 to C8. The muscles that move the forearm and hand can be organized into the following groups. The first are the muscles that act at the elbow, biceps brachii, brachialis, and the brachioradialis, the extensor muscles, anconius, and the triceps. The second group are pronators and supinators, pronator quadratus, pronator teres, and the supinator muscle. The third group are muscles that act at the wrist, flexor carpi radialis, flexor carpi ulnaris, and the palmaris longus. The extensor muscles, extensor carpi radialis longus, extensor carpi radialis brevis, and the extensor carpi ulnaris muscle. Let's discuss some of these muscles in more detail. On the posterior aspect of the arm, above the elbow, is the triceps muscle. Below the elbow is the brachioradialis, the anconius, the extensor carpi radialis longus, the extensor digitorum, the extensor carpi ulnaris, and the flexor carpi ulnaris. The extensor carpi radialis longus muscle. Its origin is the lateral supracondylar ridge of the humerus. Its insertion is the base of the second metacarpal bone. This muscle extends and abducts at the wrist. Innervation is the radial nerve. The extensor carpi ulnaris muscle. the origin is the lateral epicondyle of the humerus and the adjacent dorsal surface of the ulna. This muscle inserts into the base of the fifth metacarpal bone, and its action is extension and adduction at the wrist. The extensor carpi ulnaris muscle is innervated by the deep radial nerve. The anconeus muscle. The origin of the anconeus muscle is the posterior shaft of the lateral humerus. The insertion is the lateral margin of the olecranon and the ulnar shaft. The action of the anconeus is extension at the elbow. And this muscle is innervated by the radial nerve. The pronator quadratus muscle. The origin of this muscle is the anterior and medial surfaces of the distal ulna. Its insertion is the anterior lateral surfaces of the distal portion of the radius. The action of the pronator quadratus muscle is to pronate the forearm and hand, and it's innervated by the median nerve. The pronator teres muscle. The origin of this muscle is the medial epicondyle of the humerus and the coronoid process of the ulna. It inserts in the middle of the lateral surface of the radius, and its action is to pronate the forearm and hand as well as flexion at the elbow. The median nerve is the innervation for the pronator teres muscle. The supinator muscle. Its origin is the lateral epicondyle of the humerus and the ridge near the radial notch of the ulna. Its insertion is the anterior lateral surface of the radius distal to the radial tuberosity. Its action is to supinate the forearm and hand, and it's innervated by the deep radial nerve. The following is a clinical note on carpal tunnel syndrome. Carpal tunnel syndrome is inflammation inside the sheath that wraps around the flexor tendons of the palm, and this leads to compression of the median nerve. The symptoms range from mild to severe, and they include tingling, burning sensations in the wrist, and, in some cases, a loss of grip strength. Certain medical conditions can increase the likelihood of developing carpal tunnel syndrome, such as arthritis and hypothyroidism. But in most cases, the exact cause is unknown. Activities and careers that include repetitive contraction and the use of muscles in this region can increase the incidence. This syndrome is diagnosed based on symptoms, physical exam, and in some cases, the results of nerve conduction studies. Treatment includes immobilizing braces, the use of anti-inflammatory medication, physiotherapy, and in some cases, occupational therapy. Let's continue with the muscles that move the hand and fingers. The adductor pollicis muscle. The origin of this muscle is the metacarpal and carpal bones, and the insertion is the proximal phalanx of the thumb. Its action is adduction of the thumb, and it's innervated by the ulnar nerve deep branch. The opponens digiti minimi muscle. The origin of this muscle is the hamate bone. The insertion is the fifth metacarpal bone, and the action is to oppose the digit and thumb, flexion of the metacarpal phalangeal joint. The innervation is the ulnar nerve deep branch. The abductor pollicis brevis muscle. The origin is the transverse carpal ligament, scaphoid, and the trapezium. The insertion of the abductor pollicis brevis is the radial side of the base of the proximal phalanx of the thumb, and its action is abduction of the thumb. It's innervated by the median nerve. The dorsal interossei muscles. There are four dorsal interossei muscles on the hand. Each originates from the opposing faces of two metacarpal bones. The insertion is the basis of the proximal phalanges of digits 2 to 4. Muscle action is abduction at the metacarpal phalangeal joint of digits 2 to 4 and flexion at the metacarpal phalangeal joints. Innervation is the ulnar nerve, deep branch. The opponens pollicis muscle. This muscle originates on the hamate bone and inserts into the fifth metacarpal bone. The action of the opponens pollicis muscle is flexion of the metacarpal phalangeal joint, and it opposes the digit and thumb. Innervation is the ulnar nerve, deep branch. The palmaris brevis muscle. The origin of this muscle is the palmar aponeurosis, and it inserts on the skin of the medial border of the hand. The action of this muscle is to move the skin on the medial border towards the midline of the palm, and it's innervated by the ulnar nerve, superficial branch. Here's another clinical challenge exam question. Here's the question. Which of the following muscles performs flexion at the elbow and shoulder, as well as supination? Here's the possible answer choices. A. Pronator quadratus muscle. B. The supinator muscle. C. The adductor pollicis muscle. D. The biceps brachii muscle. Or E. The extensor carpi ulnaris muscle. This question tests your knowledge of the anatomy and function of the muscles of the upper arm. The correct answer for this question was D, the biceps brachii muscle. Its action is flexion at the elbow and shoulder and supination. Let's continue our discussion with muscles that move the hand and fingers. Similar to the dorsal interosseous muscle, there are also four palmar interosseous muscles. The origins are the sides of the second, fourth, and fifth metacarpal bones, and the insertion is the bases of the proximal phalanges and digits 2, 4, and 5. Muscle action. The palmar interosseous muscles adduct at the metacarpal phalangeal joints of digits 2, 4, and 5 and extend at interphalangeal joints. The innervation is the ulnar nerve, deep branch. The extensor pollicis brevis muscle. The origin of this muscle is the shaft of the radius distal to the origin of the abductor pollicis longus. Insertion is the base of the proximal phalanx of the thumb, and its action is extension at the thumb joints and abduction at the wrist. It's innervated by the deep radial nerve. The extensor indices muscle. The origin of this muscle is the posterior surface of the ulna and the interosseous membrane. The insertion is the posterior surface of the proximal phalanx of the index finger. Its action is extension and adduction at the joints of the index finger, and it's innervated by the deep radial nerve. The flexor digitorum profundus muscle. The origin of the flexor digitorum profundus muscle is the medial and posterior surfaces of the ulna, the medial surfaces of the coronoid process, and the interosseous membrane. The insertion are the bases of the distal phalanges of digits 2 to 5, and the action is flexion at the interphalangeal joints and some flexion in the proximal interphalangeal joints and wrist. Innervation is the anterior interosseous branch of the median and ulnar nerve. Now we'll move on to discuss muscles of the pelvic girdle and lower limb. The muscles of the pelvic girdle and lower extremity can be divided into the following groups. Number 1, the muscles that move the thigh. Number 2, the muscles that move the leg. And the third group, muscles that move the foot and toes. The musculature of the lower extremity is much more powerful than that of the upper extremity. Let's begin with muscles that move the thigh. The gluteus maximus, along with the gluteus medius, gluteus minimus, and the tensor fasciae latae, make up the gluteal group of muscles that move the thigh. The gluteus maximus is the largest, most superficial, and it overlies most of the other muscles in its group. The gluteus medius muscle and the gluteus minimus muscle extend from the iliac crest to the greater trochanter of the femur, and these muscles perform abduction and medial rotation at the hip. Muscles attached to the pelvis that move the leg are the iliopsoas group of muscles, and they're involved during flexion movements at the hip. The iliopsoas group is the psoas major and the iliacus. The origin is the anterior surfaces of the transverse processes of T12 to L5 vertebrae for the psoas muscle. Its insertion is the lesser trochanter, and the action of the psoas muscle is flexion at the hip and or lumbar vertebral joints. It's innervated by branches of the lumbar plexus. The iliacus muscle. Its origin is the iliac fossa, and it inserts in the femur distal to the lesser trochanter. Its action is flexion at the hip and or lumbar vertebral joints, and it's innervated by the femoral nerve. The gracilis muscle. The origin is the inferior ramus of the pubis, and it inserts in the medial tibia inferior to the medial condyle. The action of the gracilis muscle is flexion and medial rotation at the knee and adduction and medial rotation at the hip, and it's innervated by the obturator nerve. The adductor group of leg muscles. These perform adduction, and they include the adductor brevis and longus muscle, the adductor magnus, the pectineus, and the gracilis muscle. The adductor longus muscle has its origin on the inferior ramus of the pubis and inserts into the linea aspera of the femur. Its action is adduction, flexion, and medial rotation at the hip, and it's innervated by the obturator nerve. The pectineus muscle has its origin on the superior ramus of the pubis, and it inserts in the pectineal line inferior to the lesser trochanter of the femur. The action of the pectineus muscle is flexion and adduction at the hip, and it's innervated by the femoral nerve. The muscles that perform lateral rotation of the thigh. The lateral rotator muscles include the obturator externus and internus, the piriformis, and the quadratus femoris muscles. The obturator externus and internus muscle. The origin is the lateral and medial margins of the obturator foramen. The insertion for the externus is the trochanteric fossa of the femur, and for the internus, the medial surface of the greater trochanter. The action of these muscles is lateral rotation and abduction at the hip. Innervation for the externus is the obturator nerve, and for the internus, the special nerve from the sacral plexus. The piriformis muscle. Its origin is the anterior lateral surface of the sacrum and inserts into the greater trochanter of the femur. The action of this muscle is lateral rotation and abduction of the hip. Its innervation are branches of the sacral nerves. The quadratus femoris muscle. The origin is the lateral border of the ischial tuberosity, and it inserts into the intertrochanteric crest of the femur. The action of this muscle is lateral rotation of the hip, and it's innervated by special nerves from the sacral plexus. Muscles that move the leg and have their action lines that pass posterior to the axis of the knee joint are flexors of the knee, such as the sartorius, semimembranosus, and biceps femoris muscles. The sartorius muscle has its origin on the anterior superior iliac spine and inserts in the medial surface of the tibia, near the tibial tuberosity. Its action is flexion at the knee, abduction, flexion, and lateral rotation at the hip, and it's innervated by the femoral nerve. The semimembranosus muscle. Its origin is the ischial tuberosity, and its insertion is the posterior surface of the medial condyle of the tibia. The action of this muscle is flexion at the knee, extension, and medial rotation at the hip. It's innervated by the sciatic nerve, tibial portion. The biceps femoris muscle. This has a long head and a short head. The origin is the ischial tuberosity and the lina aspera of the femur. The insertion is the head of the fibula and the lateral condyle of the tibia. Action is flexion at the knee, extension and lateral rotation at the hip. The innervation for the long head is the sciatic nerve, tibial portion, and the innervation for the short head is the common fibular branch. The extensor muscles of the knee. These include the rectus femoris, the vastus intermedius, the vastus lateralis, and the vastus medialis. And these muscles form the quadriceps muscles. They cover the anterior and lateral aspect of the femur, and they are powerful extensor muscles of the knee and are attached to the patella through the quadriceps tendon. The rectus femoris muscle. Its origin is the anterior inferior iliac spine and the superior acetabular rim of the ilium. The insertion is the tibial tuberosity, and the action of this muscle is extension at the knee and flexion at the hip. The rectus femoris muscle is innervated by the femoral nerve. The three vastus muscles, the lateralis, intermedius, and medialis, share the same insertion, muscular action, and innervation as the rectus femoris. The origins of these three muscles are different. For the vastus lateralis, the origin is the anterior and inferior to the greater trochanter. For the vastus intermedius, the origin is anterior-lateral surface of the femur and the linea aspera. And for the vastus medialis, the origin is the entire length of the linea aspera of the femur. Next, we'll talk about the extrinsic and intrinsic muscles that move the foot and toes. The extrinsic muscles of the foot are known as extrinsic because the majority of the muscle, including the muscle belly, is outside of the foot, on the shin area of the leg. The tibialis anterior muscle. The origin of the tibialis anterior muscle is the lateral condyle and proximal shaft of the tibia. It's located on the anterior shin below the knee. Its insertion is the base of the first metatarsal bone and the medial cuneiform bone. The muscle action is dorsiflexion at the ankle and inversion of the foot. The tibialis anterior is innervated by the deep fibular nerve. The gastrocnemius muscle. Its origin is the femoral condyle. Its insertion is the calcaneus via the calcaneal tendon. Its action is the plantar flexion at the ankle and flexion at the knee. And it's innervated by the tibial nerve. The fibularis brevis muscle. Its origin is the midlateral margin of the fibula, and it inserts into the base of the fifth metatarsal bone. Its action is eversion of the foot and plantar flexion at the ankle. The fibularis brevis muscle is innervated by the superficial fibular nerve. The fibularis longus muscle. This is also an extrinsic muscle that moves the foot and toes. Its origin is the head and proximal shaft of the fibula, and it inserts into the base of the first metatarsal bones and medial cuneiform bone. Muscle action is eversion of the foot and plantar flexion at the ankle. It's innervated by the superficial fibular nerve. The soleus muscle. This is located on the back and side of the calf region. Its origin is the head and proximal shaft of the fibula and the adjacent posterior medial shaft of the tibia. The soleus muscle inserts into the calcaneus via the calcaneal tendon. The muscular action of the soleus muscle. It's a postural muscle when in a standing position, and it performs plantar flexion at the ankle. The soleus muscle is innervated by the sciatic nerve, tibial branch. There are also flexor and extensor digitorum and hallucis muscles with origins on the anterior, posterior, and lateral surfaces of the tibia and fibula bones. the flexor digitorum longus and hallucis longus, produce flexion of the big toe and second toe joints. The extensor digitorum and hallucis muscles extend these toes. The intrinsic muscles that move the foot. The intrinsic muscles that move the foot originate on the ankle or bones of the foot. The extensor digitorum brevis muscle is an example. Its origin is the superior and lateral surfaces of the calcaneus and inserts into the dorsal surface of toes 1 to 4. Its action is extension at the metatarsophalangeal joints of toes 1 to 4, and it's innervated by the deep fibular nerve. The dorsal interossei muscles. There are 4 of these. Their origin are the sides of the metatarsal bones, and their insertion is the medial and lateral sides of toe 2 and the lateral sides of toes 3 and 4. The action is abduction at the metatarsophalangeal joints of toes 3 and 4 and flexion of the metatarsophalangeal joints and extension at the interphalangeal joints of toes 2 to 4. The innervation is the lateral plantar nerve. Here's another clinical challenge exam question. This question presents a lateral view of the lower leg. A muscle on the anterior surface below the knee is identified. The question is, which muscle is identified? A. Is it the tibialis anterior? B. The fibularis longus? C. The soleus? D. The gastrocnemius? Or E. The extensor digitorum longus. This question tests your knowledge of the anatomy of the anterior and posterior muscles of the lower leg. The correct answer for this question was A. The tibialis anterior muscle was identified. Let's continue the discussion of the intrinsic muscles that move the foot. There are 3 plantar interossei muscles. The origin is the base and medial sides of the metatarsal bones. The insertion is the medial sides of toes 3 to 5. The action of these muscles is adduction of the metatarsophalangeal joints of toes 3 to 5 and flexion of the metatarsophalangeal joints and extension at the interphalangeal joints. Innervation is the lateral plantar nerve. There are also 4 lumbrical muscles that are intrinsic muscles. Their origin is the tendons of flexor digitorum longus, and the insertion is the insertions of extensor digitorum longus. The action is flexion at the metatarsophalangeal joints and extension at the interphalangeal joints of toes 2 to 5. Innervation is the medial plantar nerve and the lateral plantar nerve. The muscles of the body can be divided into certain compartments based on the fibrous layer that permeates that region, known as fascia. This fibrous sheet courses through the arms and legs and separates tissue into compartments. The fascia in the thigh forms the following compartments: the anterior compartment, medial compartment, and posterior compartment. The fascia-based compartments of the arm. The fascia compartments of the upper limb include, number 1, the arm, the anterior compartment. This includes the biceps brachii and brachialis muscle. The posterior compartment includes the triceps brachii muscle. In the forearm region, the anterior compartment includes the flexor carpi radialis and the flexor carpi ulnaris muscle. The lateral compartment includes the brachioradialis, and the posterior compartment includes the anconius and the extensor carpi ulnaris. The fascia-based compartments of the lower limb. This includes, number 1, in the thigh, the anterior compartment contains the iliopsoas and quadriceps femoris muscles. The medial compartment includes the pectineus and adductor brevis, and the posterior compartment includes the biceps femoris. In the leg, the anterior compartment includes the extensor digitorum longus. The lateral compartment includes the fibularis brevis, and the posterior compartment includes the gastrocnemius muscle. In the superficial group, and the flexor digitorum longus in the deep group. The following is a clinical note on compartment syndrome. Compartment syndrome is a medical term used to describe a condition in which the blood vessels, nerves, and muscle within a compartment made by the fascia layers are damaged and compressed. Trauma, including a crushing injury, can cause blood vessels to rupture and cause blood and fluid to leak out into that compartment. This compresses the contents of that compartment, and this compression can lead to ischemia if the blood pressure is sufficient to compress blood vessels shut. Without treatment, compartment syndrome can lead to permanent damage and destruction of the tissue that the compartment contains. The treatment for compartment syndrome includes surgery to implant drains in the area or a surgical procedure in which the fascia is cut to relieve the pressure. This is known as a fasciotomy. Now we'll move on to discuss the muscles of the axial muscular system. The axial muscles or musculature move the head and spinal column and can be grouped based on function and location into the following groups. Number 1, muscles of the head and neck. Number 2, muscles of the vertebral column. Number 3, muscles of the rectus and oblique. And number 4, the muscles of the pelvic diaphragm and the perineum. These muscles account for approximately 60% of the skeletal muscles that are in the body. Let's begin this section with the head and neck musculature. The muscles of the head and neck include the frontal belly of the occipital frontalis muscle, and this is located above the eye, the temporalis muscle in the temporal region, and around the eye is the orbicularis oculi. In the nose region is the procerus and nasalis muscle. On the cheek are the zygomaticus minor and zygomaticus major. The muscle around the mouth is the orbicularis oris muscle. Also in the cheek region are the masseter and buccinator muscles. There are a number of muscles involved in facial expression located on the head, including the buccinator muscle. The origin of the buccinator muscle is the alveolar process of the maxilla and the mandible opposite the molar teeth. This muscle inserts and blends into the fibers of the orbicularis oris muscle. Its action is to compress the cheek, and it's innervated by the facial nerve. The orbicularis oris muscle. This is around the mouth. Its origin is the maxilla and mandible. Its insertion are the lips. And its muscle action is to compress and purse the lips. It's innervated by the facial nerve. All the muscles of facial expression on the head are innervated by the facial nerve, with the exception of the levator palpebrae superioris muscle. This muscle is innervated by the oculomotor nerve. The occipital frontalis muscle, frontal belly. The origin is the epicranial aponeurosis, and the insertion is the skin of the eyebrow and bridge of the nose. The action of this muscle are to raise the eyebrows and wrinkle the forehead. It's innervated by the facial nerve. There is also an occipital belly to the occipital frontalis muscle. The origin of this occipital region is the superior nuchal line and adjacent region of the mastoid portion of the temporal bone. The insertion is the epicranial aponeurosis, and the action is to tense and retract the scalp. It's also innervated by the facial nerve. The procerus muscle. This is located above the bridge of the nose. Its origin is the lateral nasal cartilages and the aponeurosis covering the inferior portion of the nasal bones. The insertion is the aponeurosis at the bridge of the nose and the skin of the forehead. The action of the procerus muscle are to move the nose and change the position and shape of the nostrils. It's also innervated by the facial nerve. the levator labii superioris muscle. The origin of this muscle is the inferior margin of the orbit superior to the infraorbital foramen. Its insertion is the orbicularis oris, and its action is to elevate the upper lip, and it's innervated by the facial nerve. Also, there's a zygomaticus major and zygomaticus minor muscle. The zygomaticus major muscle. Its origin is the zygomatic bone near the zygomatico-temporal suture. The insertion is the angle of the mouth, and its action is to retract and elevate the corner of the mouth. It's innervated by the facial nerve. The zygomaticus minor muscle has its origin on the zygomatic bone posterior to the zygomaticomaxillary suture. The insertion is the upper lip, and the action of the zygomaticus minor muscle is to retract and elevate the upper lip. It's innervated by the facial nerve. The head and neck muscles also include 6 extraocular muscles. These muscles position the eye and are located on the surface of the orbit. The extraocular muscles include the medial rectus, lateral rectus, inferior rectus, and superior rectus. There are also 2 oblique muscles, the inferior and the superior. Let's describe the origin, insertion, and muscular action of some of the extraocular muscles. First, the lateral rectus muscle. Its origin is the sphenoid around the optic canal, and the insertion is the lateral surface of the eyeball. The action is to make the eye look laterally, and it's innervated by the oculomotor nerve. The inferior rectus muscle. The origin is the sphenoid around the optic canal. The insertion is the inferior medial surface of the eyeball. The action is to make the eye look down, and it's innervated by the oculomotor nerve. The superior oblique muscle. The origin of the superior oblique muscle is the sphenoid around the optic canal. It inserts into the superior lateral surfaces of the eyeball. Its muscle action are to make the eyes roll, look down, and laterally. And the innervation is the oculomotor nerve. The muscles of the head and neck that are used for chewing or mastication. To masticate or chew your food, the mandible and temporomandibular joint must be moved, and the muscles that are responsible for this are the masseter, temporalis, the medial pterygoid, and the lateral pterygoid muscle. The masseter muscle. Its origin is the zygomatic arch, and its insertion is the lateral surface and angle of the mandibular ramus. The action of the masseter is to elevate the mandible and close the jaw. Its innervation is a trigeminal nerve, mandibular branch. The lateral and medial pterygoid muscles. The origin is the lateral pterygoid plate and adjacent portions of the palatine bone and the greater wing of the sphenoid. The insertion is the medial surface of the mandibular rabus and the anterior neck of the mandibular condyle. The muscle action are to elevate and close the jaw, open the jaw, and protrude the mandible bone. Innervation is the trigeminal nerve, mandibular branch. Also in this region are the muscles of the tongue. All the muscles of the tongue end in the word glossus. This is the root word for tongue. These muscles position the tongue for chewing, drinking liquids, swallowing, as well as speech production. The muscles of the tongue are the styloglossus, palatoglossus, genioglossus, and the hypoglossus. The genioglossus muscle. Its origin is the medial surface of the mandible. It inserts on the body of the tongue and the hyoid bone. Its action is to depress and protract the tongue, and its innervation is the hypoglossal nerve. The hyoglossus muscle. Its origin is the body and greater horn of the hyoid bone. Its insertion is the side of the tongue, and its action is to depress and retract the tongue. It's also innervated by the hypoglossal nerve. Here's another clinical challenge exam question. Here's the question. The eye is moved within the eye orbit by a number of skeletal muscles. These muscles allow for a wide range of movement in the visual system. Which of the following statements about the extraocular muscles is correct? A. There are a total of 8 extraocular muscles on each side of the skull. B. The medial oblique muscle moves the eye laterally. C. All the extraocular muscles are innervated by the oculomotor nerve. D. The muscle action of the superior rectus muscle is to make the eyes look up. E. The medial rectus muscle moves the eye laterally. Here's the answer to the question. This question tests your knowledge of the anatomy and function of the extraocular muscles. And the correct answer is D. The muscle action of the superior rectus muscle is to make the eyes look up. Let's continue the discussion of the head and neck musculature. The muscles of the pharynx. These muscles position the food bolus into the esophagus during swallowing, and they also elevate the larynx. The pharynx has a number of constrictor muscles that constrict the pharynx to move the food bolus, the superior, middle, and inferior constrictor muscles. The pharynx also has the stylopharyngeus muscle. This is a constrictor muscle whose origin is the styloid process of the temporal bone. Its insertion is the thyroid cartilage, and its action is to elevate the larynx. It's innervated by branches of the pharyngeal plexus. The superior constrictor muscle of the pharynx has its origin on the pterygoid process of the sphenoid, the medial surfaces of the mandible, and the side of the tongue. Its insertion is the median raft attached to the occipital bone. Its action is to constrict the pharynx to move the food bolus into the esophagus. It's innervated by branches of the pharyngeal plexus. The anterior muscles of the neck. These position the larynx, move the vocal cords, depress the mandible, and provide a foundation for the tongue and pharynx muscle. The muscles include the sternocleidomastoid muscle. This is made up of a sternal head and a clavicular head. The omohyoid muscle, the sternothyroid muscle, and the sternohyoid muscle. The stylohyoid muscle. It has its origin on the styloid process of the temporal bone. It inserts into the hyoid bone, and its action is to elevate the larynx, and its innervation is the facial nerve. The sternocleidomastoid muscle. It has a clavicular head and a sternal head. The origin of the clavicular head is it attaches to the sternal end of the clavicle. The sternal head origin is attached to the manubrium. The insertion is the mastoid region of the skull and the lateral portion of the superior nuchal line. The muscle action. When both heads function together, it flexes the neck, and individually, one side bends the neck towards the shoulder and turns the face to the opposite side. The innervation is the accessory nerve and the cervical spinal nerves. Now we'll discuss the vertebral column musculature. There are three layers of muscle in the back: superficial, intermediate, and deep. The superficial and intermediate muscles are extrinsic muscles of the back. The deep muscles are the intrinsic muscles of the back. The muscles of the back include the longissimus cervicus, semispinalis thoracis, quadratus lumborum, iliocostalis thumborum, iliocostal thoracis, longissimus capitis, and the spinalis capitis muscle. The spinalis cervicus muscle. Its origin is the inferior portion of the ligamentum nuciae of the spinous processes of C7. The insertion is the spinous process of the axis. The muscle action is to extend the neck, and it's innervated by the cervical spinal nerves. The longissimus cervicus muscle. Its origin is the transverse processes of superior thoracic vertebrae. Its insertion is transverse processes of middle and superior cervical vertebrae. The action of the longissimus cervicus muscle is the two sides act together to extend the neck, and each side can rotate and laterally flex the neck to that side. The innervation is the cervical and thoracic spinal nerves. The deep muscles of the back include the three spinalis muscles, the multifidus, rotators, interspinalis, and the intertransversiae muscles. The semispinalis capitis muscle. The origin is the processes of the inferior cervical and the superior thoracic vertebrae. The insertion is the occipital bone of the skull. The action, together, the two sides extend the neck, and individually they extend and laterally flex the neck and turn the head to the opposite side. Innervation is the cervical spinal nerves. The interspinalis muscle. Its origin is the spinous process of each vertebrae, and it inserts into the spinous processes of the more superior vertebrae. The action of this muscle is to extend the vertebral column, and its innervation is the cervical, thoracic, and lumbar spinal nerves. The spinal flexor muscles. The spinal flexor muscles include the longus capitis, the longus coli, and the quadratus lumborum. The longus capitis muscle has its origin on the transverse processes of cervical vertebrae. Its insertion is the base of the occipital bone, and its action, together, the two sides flex the neck, whereas individually, each side rotates the head to that side. It's innervated by the cervical spinal nerves. The longus coli muscle. The origin is the anterior surfaces of the transverse processes of cervical and superior thoracic vertebrae. The insertion are the transverse processes of the superior cervical vertebrae. The action of the longus coli muscle is to flex and/or rotate the neck, and this muscle limits hyperextension. The innervation is the cervical spinal nerves. The oblique and rectus musculature group. Between the vertebral column and the ventral midline are the oblique and rectus muscles. These muscles perform rotation of the vertebral column, and the rectus muscles oppose the action of the erector spinae muscles. The thoracic cavity and the abdominal pelvic cavity are separated by the oblique and rectus muscles of the trunk and the diaphragm. The external oblique muscle. Its origin is the external and inferior borders of ribs 5 to 12. The insertion is the external oblique aponeurosis extending to the linea alba and the iliac crest. The action of this muscle is to compress the abdomen and depress the ribs. It flexes or laterally rotates the vertebral column to the opposite side. The innervation of the external oblique muscle are the intercostal nerves 5 to 12, the iliohypogastric, and the ilioinguinal nerves. The intercostal muscles, they are internal and external. The origin of the external is the inferior border of each rib. The origin of the internal is the superior border of each rib. The insertion, for the external, it's the superior border of more inferior ribs. And for the internal, it's the inferior border of the more superior rib. The actions of the intercostals, the external intercostals elevate the ribs, and the internal intercostals depress the ribs. The innervation is the intercostal nerve. There are also internal oblique muscles and the rectus abdominis muscle, which are deep to the superficial muscles. The internal oblique muscle has its origin on the thoracolumbar fascia and the iliac crest. Its insertion is the inferior surfaces of ribs 9 to 12, costal cartilages 8 to 10, linea alba, and the pubis. The action of the internal oblique muscle is to compress the abdomen depress the ribs, and flex and rotate the vertebral column to the same side. Innervation are the intercostal nerves 5 to 12, the iliohypogastric, and the ilioinguinal nerves. The rectus abdominis muscle is also a deep muscle. Its origin is the superior surface of the pubis around the symphysis. Its insertion is the inferior surfaces of the cartilage of ribs 5 to 7 and the xiphoid process of the sternum. The action of the rectus abdominis muscle is to depress the rib, flexes the vertebral column, and compresses the abdomen. Innervation are the intercostal nerves. The following is a clinical note on hernias. A hernia involves a protrusion of an organ or fascia through the wall that normally contains it in its cavity. The different types of hernias include an inguinal hernia and a hiatal hernia. An inguinal hernia is caused by the protrusion of an organ or tissue in the abdominal cavity into the inguinal canals, which are normally a passageway for the testes in the male to descend into the scrotum. This is the most common type of hernia in males. A hiatal or diaphragmatic hernia occurs when a defect in the esophageal hiatus of the diaphragm leads to the protrusion of the stomach into the chest. Hernias can be diagnosed based on clinical history, physical exam, and imaging, such as a barium swallow. Typically, hernias require surgery to repair the defect in the wall that contains the organ or the normal passageway it lines. A muscle that separates the abdominal pelvic and thoracic cavities is the diaphragm. The diaphragm is part of the rectus group of muscles, and its origin is the xiphoid process, ribs 7 to 12, and their associated cartilages, and the anterior surfaces of the lumbar vertebrae. The insertion is the central tendinous sheet. When the diaphragm contracts, it enlarges the thoracic cavity and the space in the lungs for gas exchange. It also compresses the abdominal pelvic cavity. The last group of the axial musculature we'll discuss are the perineum and pelvic diaphragm muscles. The muscles of the perineum and pelvic diaphragm perform the following functions. Number 1, they support the organs of the pelvic cavity. Number 2, they control the movements of material through the urethra and the anus. And number 3, they flex the joints of the sacrum and coccyx. This musculature extends from the sacrum and coccyx to the ischium and pubis. The term pelvic diaphragm or anal diaphragm pertain to the muscular sheet in that region. The muscles of the perineum include the bulbospongiosus, the ischiocavernosus, the superficial transverse perineal, the deep transverse perineal, and the external urethral sphincter. The muscles of the pelvic diaphragm are the coccygeus, the levator ani, and the external anal sphincter. The pelvic diaphragm forms the foundation of the anal triangle. The perineum and pelvic diaphragm muscles in the female. The bulbospongiosus muscle. This muscle has its origin on the perineal body, the central tendon of the perineum. Its insertion is the bulb of the vestibule, the perineal membrane, and the body of the clitoris and corpus cavernosum. The action of the bulbospongiosus muscle in the female is to compress and stiffen the clitoris and to narrow the vaginal opening. The innervation is the pudendal nerve perineal branch. The external urethral sphincter in the female. The origin is the ischial and pubic rami. The insertion is the median raft and the inner fibers that encircle the urethra. The action of the external urethral sphincter are to close the urethra, compress the vagina and greater vestibular glands. And the innervation for this muscle is the pudendal nerve, perineal branch. The ischiocavernosus muscle. The origin in the female is the ramus and tuberosity of the ischium. The insertion is the corpus cavernosum of the clitoris and also the ischiopubic ramus. Muscle action is to compress and stiffen the clitoris, and the innervation is the pudendal nerve, perineal branch. The superficial transverse perineal muscle. This muscle has its origin on the ischial ramus. Its insertion is the central tendon of the perineum, and its action is to stabilize the central tendon of the perineum, and it's innervated by the pudendal nerve, perineal branch. Now we'll discuss the perineum and pelvic diaphragm muscles in the male. In the male, the bulbospongiosus muscle has its origin on the perineal body, the central tendon of the perineum, and the median raphe. Its insertion is the corpus spongiosum, the perineal membrane, and the corpus cavernosum. In the male, the action of the bulbospongiosus muscle is to compress the base, stiffen the penis, and ejects the urine or semen. The innervation is the pudendal nerve, perineal branch. The external urethral sphincter in the male. The origin is the ischial and pubic rami. The median raphe at the base of the penis and the inner fibers that encircle the urethra are the insertion. The action for this muscle is to close the urethra, compress the prostate and bulbourethral glands. The innervation is the pudendal nerve, perineal branch. The deep transverse perineal muscle. The origin is the ischial ramus, and the insertion is the median raphe of the urogenital diaphragm. The action is to stabilize the central tendon of the perineum, and the innervation is the pudendal nerve, perineal branch. The coccygeus muscle. This muscle has its origin on the ischial spine. Its insertion is the lateral inferior borders of the sacrum and coccyx, and its action is to flex the coccygeal joints, elevate and support the pelvic floor. Its innervation is the inferior sacral nerves. In the male, there's what's called the urogenital triangle and an anal triangle. The urogenital triangle includes the penis, the bulbospongiosus muscle, the ischiocavernosus muscle, and a portion of the superficial transverse perineal muscle. The anal triangle includes the anus, the external anal sphincter, and a portion of the pubal coccygeus muscle. Here's another clinical challenge exam question. Which of the following statements about the bulbospongiosus muscle is correct? Here are the possible choices. A. Only males have a bulbospongiosus muscle. B. In both a male and female, the bulbospongiosus muscle is innervated by the pudendal nerve, perineal branch. C. In the female, the bulbospongiosus muscle inserts on the central tendon of the perineum. D. In the male, the bulbospongiosus muscle inserts on the central tendon of the perineum. Or answer choice E. The pelvic nerve innervates the bulbospongiosus muscle. Here's the answer to the question. This question tests your knowledge of the anatomy and function of the muscles of the perineum and the pelvic diaphragm. The correct answer for this question was B. In both the male and the female, the bulbospongiosus muscle is innervated by the pudendal nerve, perineal branch. The following are clinical terms that are associated with the axial and appendicular musculature. Hernia. A hernia is when an organ or tissue protrudes through a cavity that normally contains it. Bursitis. Bursitis is the inflammation of a bursa in one of the joints of the body. Muscle cramps. Muscle cramps are involuntary prolonged muscle contractions that can be painful. The rotator cuff. The rotator cuff is a group of muscles and tendons that stabilize the shoulder. Tendinitis. Tendinitis is inflammation of the connective tissue that surrounds a tendon. A myotomy. A myotomy is a surgical procedure in which a muscle is cut. Ischemia. This is a restriction in the blood supply to an area or tissue that can lead to damage to the tissue it supplies. A sprain. A sprain is tear or damage in a ligament or tendon of the body, and it's typically caused by the overextension of the ligament or tendon. A strain. A strain is an injury to a muscle or tendon that's the result of overstretching. It's also known as a pulled muscle. Summary. The following is a summary of what you've learned in this tutorial. The muscles that position the pectoral girdle are the trapezius, subclavius, serratus anterior, rhomboid minor and major, pectoralis minor, and the levator scapulae. The muscles associated with the pelvic girdle and the lower extremity can be grouped into the following categories. Number 1, muscles that move the thigh. Number 2, muscles that move the leg. And number 3, muscles that move the foot and toes. Fascia is a fibrous layer that permeates different regions of the body. And this fibrous sheet courses through the arms and legs and separates the tissue and muscle into compartments. The muscles of the perineum and pelvic diaphragm perform the following functions. Number 1, they support the organs of the pelvic cavity. Number 2, they control the movements of material through the urethra and the anus. And number 3, they flex the joints of the sacrum and coccyx. Congratulations on completing the axial and appendicular musculature audio tutorial. For more audio and visual tutorials in chemistry, biology, physics, and math, go to www.rapidlearningcenter.com. Thank you.